Hello and welcome to episode 317 of the Hooniverse podcast. I'm your host, Jeff. Last name starts with a G, whatever, who cares? And my co-host is the wonderful Ron Baugh. How are you doing tonight, sir?
I'm well, as usual.
Good, good, good. We've got another great guest this week. Everyone say hello to our friend, all-around wonderful person, Lynn Woodward.
Hi, guys.
You know the rules, Lynn.
Cheers.
I'm drinking water.
Oh, I know.
That's bad luck to toast with water.
I should have made it look like some sort of swanky, like, mid-century modern cocktail.
Yeah, and I just want to give you guys both a note. If your video feed looks very low quality while we're recording, it does that to save bandwidth, but it's recording a higher res picture on the edit side. So don't worry if pictures start to look like low res and stuff.
Okay, great.
And I will edit that. The final thing.
And if we cut off your video, that means your answers suck, you're boring, and you're done.
Okay, now I'm going to leave it in because that was funny. There we go. Lynn, how are you doing this evening?
I am great. Doing really well. Thank you so much. It's so nice to see you guys. Hi.
Likewise. Glad to have you.
Thank you. Thank you.
So for those who don't know, Lynn is a very active person in this industry, and we are actually coworkers.
We are. That's amazing.
But I don't even know if we're going to bring up Cox Automotive stuff tonight because we're going to talk about other things. I'm going to roll right into it because what I want to do is I want to back up and figure out how you made your way into this industry, because at some point in your career, you were in film and television, and then you were like a high level marketing type doing Mad Men shit. And now you talk about cars. So can you walk us through that journey?
Yeah, it's funny because the more people that I get to know in this business, the more I hear the circuitous routes that everyone has kind of taken. Mine definitely is one of those. I was an actor when I was a kid, so I grew up in Los Angeles. And, I was an actor when I was a kid because it's like, you're cute. And it's like, hey, mom, look at these glasses. Like, it doesn't take a whole lot of skill or talent to do that. And, you know, as I kind of got into high school, I really wanted to be a writer. And I thought, oh, that's so great. But only smart people are writers. And I'm not smart enough to do that. So I got into advertising. And I thought, well, anybody can do that. And I was in advertising for about 15 years. And I worked at some killer agencies. And I got to travel the world, and I worked on brands like Nike and Apple and E-Trade and Vail Resorts. And the entire time that I was doing that, I was always sort of in the back of my head. It's like, you want to be a writer, you want to be a writer, you want to be a writer. And so at one point I just decided, and I started writing scripts and screenplays because I'd had that kind of production background when I was a kid. And even in advertising, you're kind of making these 30-second little movies. And I just loved that whole process. And so, you know, at one point I just said, you know, I had been writing scripts kind of on my own time. And I said, you know what, if you don't leave now, and this was when I was years old, it was just one of those, like, it's now or never, girl, like, do it, or you're going to end up being in advertising for the next 10 years and you're going to have huge regrets. Yeah, and so I left and I thought, yeah, I'm going to do this. And that whole sort of, maybe it's a cliche of a starving writer, was real. That was no cliche. I think I remember I wrote a post one time on Facebook about how I was eating a can of refried beans for lunch, because that was all the money that I had. And, about 5 years into the process, and I'd had a little bit of success. Like, I wrote for a couple animated kids shows. Like, I wrote an episode or two of this show. Boy, how ill-conceived and ill-advised, but it was a show called NFL Rush Zone. And it was about, it was like an animated kids show to, like, get kids into NFL football. Only, like, you couldn't have, and it was like these little kids superheroes who would, like, work with the actual players in the NFL, and they would, like, beat up robots and aliens, only you couldn't, like, nobody could hit each other in the head because of, like,
right,
because
I was just about to ask, because it's like pre-CTE, like?
No, it was like right era? In the middle of it. It's okay. Like, it was like total kid propaganda to get them.
Well,
into.
Yeah, I was going to say it's like the NFL version of G.I. Joe.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Or like if like the cigarette people had like a Mr. Siggy animated show, right? I mean, that's kind of the thing. So the other great part of it was they used real players. And then every once in a while, we'd get that call that was like, yeah, okay, guys, so Ray Rice, like, we can't use him anymore because
oh,
he
shit, yeah.
Okay, yeah. Guys, so Ray Lewis, like, we can't use that guy because he just got popped for, like some marijuana stuff. And so we'd have to keep pulling these episodes. Again, eventually the show got canceled, obviously. So I had a little bit of success. And then all of a sudden, it was just like, I couldn't get arrested. It was so crazy. I literally was going down the street to the Chinese restaurant close to my house just to try and get it. They wouldn't even hire me. I mean, it was just it was so nuts. And I had lunch with a friend of mine who was also trying to be a writer. And she said, just go freelance. Go back, dip your toe back into advertising and freelance for, you know, you can get paid really well as a project manager. And I was like, okay, great. She gave me the names of three people. One of those people who hired me instantly was somebody at the Enthusiast Network.
Oh.
And I had no idea what the Enthusiast Network was. I was like, these people make magazines. Like, this isn't what I do. But they were like, look, we want you. Like, you're great. You have a great, but, you know, it's just an event we're putting on. And I was like, all right, what's it called? And the lady was like, it's called the Concours d'Elegance. And I'm like, well, that sounds fancy. Sure. Why not? And she's like, it's about cars. And I'm like, awesome. I've loved cars since my dad had two Porsche Speedsters when I was little and had a Ford DSL and had a square back. And like when I was 14, I'm like, Mom, I'm going to start shifting this Toyota Corolla and I'm sitting in the right seat and you just tell me when to do it and I'm going to do it because I want to learn how to drive like now. And I'd always loved cars and I had this like, maybe after the story, I'll tell you sort of some of my little fantasy cars when I was in my teens and 20s. But I started working for the Enthusiast Network, and it was a freelance gig. And I just, the world of automotive journalism and writing just was like flung open in this massive and very significant way to me. And the people that I met, the cars that I got, I mean, you can imagine, I mean, the first time you go to that Concours d'Elegance is like the most astounding thing you've ever seen in your life. I mean, you're just like
Pebble Beach, right?
Yeah, your neck hurts from just moving it so much because there's so much to see. I think we were staying at like the Motel 6 and there were like Lamborghinis and Aston Martins in the parking lot and you're in the garage and you're like, okay, like sign me up. I am in all the way. And you know, it just sort
I think that Motel 6 during Pebble Beach, it's like four or something a night too.
Easily the most expensive Motel 6 in the United States. And you know, at some point, and you know, one of the editors there was just like, hey, would you ever want to write about cars? And I was like, yeah, yeah. And so I just started, it was like one assignment at a time. And I, there was a huge, I mean, the steepest learning curve you could possibly imagine. I still feel like I'm learning things, which again, as a something aged person, is wonderful because normally people are just sort of stuck in a rut and there's just like this kind of routine. And for me, it's like, no, I'm constantly absorbing, you know, what this classic car, what's this, you know, what's this new thing? How long is this car? What generation of it is this? And what are the transformations that it's been through? I mean, it's just, it's absolutely fantastic. And I never in a million years would have imagined that I would be writing about the automotive space. And yet it is absolutely like one of the best things that's happened to me. And consequently, like over the last probably 2 years, some of the seeds that I had sown in the movie business have kind of come back and have started growing. And so I'm writing movies again too. And in all of my spare time, but it is absolutely, I will say this without hesitation, this is the best job I've ever had.
Wow. That was a hell of an answer. Nice. We our favorite thing on this show is, because some people are like, oh, am I talking too much? If you have a guest on a podcast who's like, has a great answer and they're not rambling and they're just going, it's like Ron and I, we just sit back. Yeah, exactly. We interjected once or twice just to like, so people know we're still here, but they're like, no, no, no. Like, you guys shut the fuck up. Like, let Lynn say what she has to say.
Totally.
That was awesome. So
I have a quick question.
Yeah.
I didn't know this child actor component. Like,
oh yeah.
Did you do any like notable like films or, I mean, this was, I'm assuming like in the 80s. So like sitcoms were like the big thing. Like,
yes,
I know
Ron.
Jonathan Ward from Icon was in.
Jonathan Ward was next
Charles
level.
In Charge, right?
Jonathan Ward really? Was next level. Was next level. Like, I was never like star of a movie or in a, like, I always had like, I had, I was marginal, you know, I did a ton of commercials because I was cute. And it was like,
commercials
hey,
pay well.
Look at this product, you know? And so I did a ton of commercials. Like, I did a lot of Burger King commercials and McDonald's commercials, nice. And Mattel commercials. Oh, I just did the F out of Mattel commercials, like Barbie. Eh. And it was great. I did a little show called Battlestar Galactica. I was in one of those episodes, and I did a show called The Waltons, a couple episodes of that show, and Little House on the Prairie, and now I'm super dating myself, but whatever, who cares? And so, yeah, you know, I was like just one of those kind of working, like I worked all the time. I was on a couple of pilots, like as like the daughter of the, you know, the family sitcom daughter, but the shows that I did never made it to series, which is, listen, I'm actually quite happy that I didn't kind of get sucked into that, you know, that washing machine of insanity that is being a, you know, being a child actor. But I fully credit my parents for being uber strict and not allowing any shenanigans or tomfoolery. I mean, there was just no latitude. It's like, the weird thing about being a kid actor, and I can guarantee you this is why like so many of them have so much trouble, is you're sort of straddling this line between, at work you are an adult, you are a professional, this is your cue, here are your lines, you better know this, cry now you laugh, and you're just like, you are a pro and you have to be that way. And then for me, when I got home, it was like, oh, now you have to clean your room and now you have to do the dishes. And I was like, fuck you. Like, I'm not doing that. Like, I'm the breadwinner here. And I can see how that would be really like just a complete mind F for a young person, especially when you don't have a parent who's like, uh-uh, you're 8 years old. You're 10 years old. Shut up. It's your bedtime. End of story, you know? And so, so for me, it was very, you know, it was weird. People at school were super mean and, you know, I didn't have many friends. You know, don't do that to Sloan, dude, is all I'm, I guess.
No
Jeff.
Plans to, there's no,
no,
plans
no, no child acting, but you know, it gave me the love of filmmaking and that kind of, you know, I'm okay in front of a camera. I guess that's the job I have now. And it sort of set me up for this. And if that was the price to pay for this wonderful thing that I get to do now, so be it. Great.
Yeah, absolutely. So we have an idea of your path here now, and you're definitely, you know, a car enthusiast. You have some cool vehicles. You've bought and sold some cool vehicles. I'm going to dive right into it. What made you want your Montero?
Oh, I've coveted one of them boxy ass off-roaders since I was in high school. So, you know, dream cars for me are aplenty. But when I was young, like the CJ5, the CJ7 were high at the top of the list and completely, of course, unattainable.
I hate to be chauvinistic or even just like, I don't know. Was that Daisy Duke inspired? Like,
no,
that was
no,
my
no.
First experience no. with CJ5, and like I loved that car. Like, no matter who drove it, but obviously, I mean, maybe, it was like, you know, more what?
Now that I think about it, maybe, because I had this, like, when I was in high school, I had this fantasy in my head of like driving along PCH and wearing cowboy boots and one of them just like outside the truck and like, just my hair just going, just like listening to Don Henley, Boys of Summer. And you're just like, yeah, this is bitchin'. That was
I was literally singing that today in the car.
That is a great song.
I didn't have cowboy boots on though.
It's a great imagery.
But you know, I really never watched that show. So maybe I just kind of got it vicariously through the zeitgeist or whatever. But there was just so much, like, to me, that was just the absolute epitome of freedom. And that was all I wanted when I was a kid. I just wanted to go when I wanted to go and do when I wanted to do and what I wanted to do. And so that sort of embodied, you know, that for me. And cars in general, I think for me, they were this kind of symbol of like independence and just, I can just go. And, I loved design too. I mean, when the Suzuki Samurai came out, I was just like, oh, attainable. Like, that's amazing. Because, and I swear at the time, and I stick by this assessment. I was like, it's like a 7-Up can on wheels. It's amazing. And I loved it then. And I, of course, you know, like the cool guy Brad got one for graduation and, you know, for high school. And I was like, oh, fuck you. Like, I'm driving my 77 Datsun B210 around and I'm, you know, jump starting it because it sucks and whatever, but it was at least a car. And so, yeah, there had just always been this like boxy off-roader fantasy in my mind. And of course, now you fast forward to where we are now in the market being what it is and can't afford a two-door G-Wagon. Sorry. I love me a short wheelbase too. I know you and I go back and forth about the supremacy of short versus long wheelbase off-road vehicles, but can't afford, you know, can't even afford like the Land Rover, the Disco, like any of the cool things that you're just like, oh man, I want that. Like a Defender, like an old Defender 90. Oh, it's so boss, but
nobody can afford that.
It's out of my price range. And so When I sort of discovered the Montero, I was like, now that is something I can afford. Yep. Actually, how I found that car is such a great story. And I kind of have happened upon all of my cars in a similar way. But I was just walking around my neighborhood. And I don't know about you guys, but when I do, I like have these little, if I could build my perfect car, it would be this. And so I'm building this perfect car in my head and it's a Montero and it's a short wheelbase, but it's the blue one with the, like that kind of gray interior. And cause I'm a navy's my favorite color and yeah, that would be so bitchin'. And I'm walking in my neighborhood one day and boom, there's one in some dude's driveway. And I'm like, and it doesn't look good. It's not in good shape. The hood and the roof are like all, you know, patinaed out. And I'm like, and I had just bought the Datsun, like, not even a year before. And I'm like, you just bought a car, a second car. You don't need a third car, dude. Like, stop being greedy. And so I was like, okay, fine. Kept walking. And then, you know, found myself walking by it quite often. And then one day, it like, poof, a little for sale sign came up in the window. And I was like, damn, come on. Like, this is horrible.
Undeniable.
Kept walking. I mean, it just sat there and the sign starts like sagging in the window. And I'm like, oh my gosh. And then I made the stupid mistake of telling Aaron Robinson about it. And he's like, let's go look at it. And I was like, yeah. Oh, you enabling jerk. So we went, I did good friend, right? Buy another car, Lynn. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I went and we looked at it and, you know, it turned over, it had a new battery, like it worked fine. We talked him down a little bit because clearly, like, you know, you turn and like the bushings were just like, and I was like, oh God, this needs a lot of work. Like there's spiders living in it and all the other stuff. But I ended up buying it for $2,400 and, oh my gosh, just what a great car. And it's so funny because the next day, literally the guy who was selling it for his friend calls me up and he's like, you're so lucky because these two dudes literally just like came here and had seen the car 2 days before and offered like full price for it and then some. And he's like, but you snagged it first.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. But I told the guy, you know, because he was an old Hollywood makeup artist, and the car had been driven back and forth from Mexico, like throughout its life. He was the original owner of the car. And I said, listen, I said, no one's going to take better care of this thing than I am. And I'm not going to flip it. I'm not going to, you know, trick it out. I want it to be as stock and original as possible. But I'm going to use it and I'm going to love it, because this is the car, like, this is what's been in my head for, you know, all this time. So
nice.
He was really sweet about it. And yeah, it's just, you know, maybe if someday I could afford a, you know, a baby G wagon, I probably wouldn't even get it. I love this car so much. Oh, wow. So I get a bouncy seat in the driver's seat. That's all I would do, dude.
The best. I love that.
How long have you had it?
Gosh, 3 years now.
I love it because I don't remember ever seeing a two-door Montero. So, like, it's super.
They didn't sell them. They did not sell them here for very long. I want to say it's like 1 or 2 years, maybe.
I think it was two.
Yeah, maybe, because mine's an 87. So I think an 87 and an 88. Maybe there's an 89. Maybe it was 3 years.
I think
years.
There's an 89 as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe there's definitely, because there's definitely an 89 Raider.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know when that collab happened, but it, yeah, you know, I saw just, I love how square they are. You can see for miles out of them. I mean, it's just like,
yes. Fantastic. And yours is nice. Yours has been repainted. It looks great. It's just a great little perfectly period correct little machine. I love it.
It is.
It's
when
great.
I saw you pull into Radwood, I was just like, that is like the most authentic, like perfect Japanese like 80s SUV. Like there were some other cool examples, but like yours was just like pristine and stock. Like,
oh, thank you. It's all original too. It's in great shape for what it is. And yeah, I mean, I've definitely had those fantasies. I'm a big off-roader. I love, you know, I love getting in some dirt, and I've had those big fantasies of I'm going to get, you know, cause it's on 15s right now. And the size, like they don't make KO2s for the stock wheels that I have on it. And I'm like, oh, I'd love to rock some KO2s on this, but I don't want like, I love the Steelies, and I kind of grapple with it. And Jeff, you and I were talking about this. I had to put new shocks on it, and I was like, do I go Bilsteins or do I just go like just standard? And I'm like, you know what? Just keep it OG.
Do the opposite of what I'm doing, basically. Your wallet will thank you. The truck will be fine.
Oh, yes.
Of course, I'm like full aftermarket proponent. I'm just like,
you are, Ron. But you
Fox
know,
shocks. Big tires. I'll hook up the wheels. Don't worry about it. Like,
well, the funny thing is, because BF, you should check this, because BF Goodrich came out with, and you might already know this because you know this shit, but BF Goodrich came out with a version of the KO2 aimed at cars and crossovers. So it's like a KO2 looking tire. It's mm-hmm. like a KO2, but there's different sizes because so many crossovers and like, you know, like Subaru Crosstrek and shit are throwing KO2s on them, and they don't want the full light truck style tire.
Yeah.
So maybe they make one, they might make one that fits it in that version.
Yeah.
Be kind of cool. So worth looking into at least
I'll check with my guy.
Apparently I'm getting roasted on Autotrader's TikTok, because we do these videos where it's like, we'll do three things that we have to do. You know, it's a quick video. It's a TikTok. So, and the man wants us to do TikTok. So I'll do Josh, our shooter, we'll do three things I like about X, a vehicle we're shooting. And then we'll do three things I don't like about it. And one thing I said on the F-150 Tremor we just reviewed, I was like, you know, the wheels and tires are cool, but it's got to have KO2s. It's got to have Fox shocks. But that's what the Raptor's for, I guess. And I'm getting roasted in the comments. They call me a boomer. And they're like, tire technology has moved so far from the KO2. I'm like, what? Like, what are you talking about? Like, KO2 is not,
KO2's
not that old. And they still win Baja with it. I don't know. Not even going to go. I find it hilarious. But
every single off-roader I know runs KO2s.
Right. and then the ones who Overlanders for Show on Instagram, because they probably get them for free, run Falcon Wild Peaks or Toyo Opencut, which are those tires.
Bowing out of this conversation, I know nothing about this.
Sure. Those tires are fine for.
He legit left.
I think he has to go get something.
I'm here, but I actually have something on the stove that I forgot about.
Oh, go eat dinner, buddy.
I was going to say they get those tires for free, and those tires are, they're fine. They're totally fine. But a KO2 is what you go to Mexico and win with, you know?
Yeah. I ran open countries on the Montero because that was the most aggressive tire that fit on the stock, the stock wheel. And again, it's fine. I've gone wheeling in it, but if I were to do something serious, they don't have that same grip that a more knobby tire does. And so it's, but I will look into that because that's interesting.
Yeah. 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 No, it's smart of them to offer that tire considering how many people, our friend Josh has KO2s on his wagon and he'd be better served with the non-light truck one because his are noisy and heavy, because they're supposed to go on trucks.
Mileage is very compromised on those. But yeah, I mean, it's crazy to me. It's wonderful and crazy to me how many stock vehicles are putting aggressive off-road tires on there. And a lot of it is for looks, but I do think that there's been definitely more interest, especially since this pandemic has kind of forced people to not travel or just get in their cars. There's definitely just been this huge boom in that overlanding off-roading segment. So
absolutely.
Yeah.
As a wheel supplier, we've experienced a huge increase in like overlanding spec, whether it's Subarus, Sprinters, Transits, your just typical GM or Ford truck, like that's where it's at now. Like,
yeah,
totally. Ron, can you do me a favor and try clicking your video window again?
Yeah, I don't know what just happened.
I clicked it because it wasn't loading, and so I think you have to unclick it on your end.
Yeah, hang on.
Technical difficulties.
Good thing I edit these podcasts. So it just says loading. So I think it's just taking a minute to. There we are. Okay. Hey, look at that pretty face.
Where's your mac and cheese? What were you making?
Broccoli cheddar soup, actually.
Ooh, yum.
Yeah.
Did you have more to go on the tire thing, Ron? I'm sorry.
No. That was it. It's just like the overlanding, off-roading, camping, segment of our industry, the wheel industry, is like exploded since the beginning of the pandemic. Like that's what's totally driving our business lately. Absolutely. Because everybody's turned to the outdoors and it's like an easy upgrade to like utilize your vehicle and get out and enjoy nature and not be indoors and infecting others. So it's a weird time, but SEMA has this huge overland experience the last 2 years. So it's here to stay, for sure. It's
absolutely.
It's not necessarily a fad. Like if SEMA was all about, big wheels and luxury and exotic vehicles 10, 15 years ago, it's all about overlanding and kind of being one with nature and like treading lightly.
Though, these automotive trends do fade in and fade out. There's a hardcore group that will do it forever. And I think a lot of it, oddly, I think it's a lot of JDM sports car fans grew up a little bit, had families and wanted to go camping and shit. And they bought, Land Cruisers and 4Runners. You're
100% correct because that is my office, my coworkers to a T. Everybody's got like 80s, 90s Japanese, sports cars or even sedans, but then they've got 4Runners and GXs and even, Raptors.
They have Suzuki XL7s.
Nobody has an XL7, but that is an oversight. Somebody should.
Uh-oh. Lynn does.
I know.
Now,
stupidest build ever.
Perfect segue, because I wanted to ask, I'm going to ask this question. I'm going to preface it by saying I'm not talking about your B210. Do you miss your Datsun?
I do.
Lynn had the 1600 Roadster?
It was a 1966 1600 Roadster, a Datsun Roadster. And, so my first car was a Datsun. Nothing anywhere near as cool as the Roadster, but I had the notchback. It's a 77 B210, not the Honeybee version, which was super cute and cool, not the fastback version with like the louvered windows. No, mine was the super shit notchback. It was bright orange, and maybe that was all it had going for it. It was kind of that Z, like that Z orange that came out and on the first iteration of the Z. And but I loved it. I loved that car. You know, it was 4-speed. Vinyl ripped piece of garbage seats. It was super fun. However, fast forward, and I'm at Bob's Big Boy at the, so every Friday night at the Bob's Big Boy in Burbank, there's a sweet car show. And now, I grew up in Burbank, and I went to high school in Burbank. And every Friday night after football games, we would go there, and the car show was not in existence when I was in school. So it was like that. Really? In the early years, and then later on after I graduated from high school, it kind of came back. So so I didn't get to ever see those things when I was there. But so I went to a show, and this was probably, I mean, this was even before the Enthusiast Network that I kind of came back into like this sort of car thing. But I just loved going to car shows, and I would go check them out. And I saw this guy in a red little, like a little sports car convertible. And I was like, that is so cool. And I'm like, gosh, it looks a little like a Fiat. It looks a little like an MG. It's got these kind of like, sort of looks like cues going on. And I got closer to it, and I was like, this is a Datsun. I'm like, I had no idea. I mean, it just kind of blew my mind. And I was like, this is amazing. And the car just kind of stayed with me. And then as I got into this space, and everyone around me is like, check out this auction, I'm going to buy this thing. Or like, everyone's bored, and so they're just literally like fantasy buying cars online just for no reason. And so I got into that habit, and that was always the car that I was looking at, that I was always Googling. I found one on Craigslist. This was right before I got my job at KBB. I was still a freelancer. And I'm like, I have no business buying another car, but I'm going to look anyway. And I found this car in San Diego, and it was beautiful. I mean, it didn't have to have work done to it, which was great, because at the time, like, I had no tools. I had no space. I had no nothing. And I was like, yeah, I don't want a project car. Like, that is like the worst thing ever. And so I kept looking at it, and the guy, I don't know, maybe he had like spelled something wrong in the title, or maybe he was, you know, at the time he was maybe asking too much money, whatever. Nobody was buying this car. And I was like, there's either something wrong with it, or, you know, whatever. It'll be gone in, you know, a week. And I kept going back to it. 8 months went by. So see, this is the same thing as the Montero. Like, 8 months went by. Sometimes he'd pull the ad down, and then sometimes he'd put the ad back up. And the closer I got, it was in the interview process at KBB. And I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to go down and look at it. Like, it was in La Jolla. Like, the road trip. Be fun. That's dumb. So stupid. So I went down there and I looked at it and I drove it, and I was like, oh, I'm so screwed. I'm buying this car. And so I bought the car before I even got the job at Kelley Blue Book. And I was like, oh, we got the job, because no, I have this car payment. But our mutual friend, Derek Powell, got his Audi Allroad out and got his trailer, and we hauled down there, and I picked up this car, and I knew I had made the right decision, because even just on the drive back, like, I would see little kids in cars, like, as we were driving by, and they would look at this little car, and they would just, the smiles on their faces, little girls would look at it and just be like, oh, wow, like, look at that. Like, they were just so, it was so beautiful and so adorable, and just this cute little thing. And And so, yeah. And it had that effect on everybody. I mean, I literally would have people pull over if I was on this, like just talking, like parked, and they would pull over and come over to the car and be like, my uncle had one of these when he was in college. And I used to love this car. And it was such a conversation starter. And boy, I really enjoyed it. And I actually started working on it, and had friends who would help me and help me figure things out. And I changed all the gaskets and I, you know, did all kinds of stuff. I didn't do the work myself, but I did have the 4-speed. I put a 5-speed transmission in it. So it really was then actually fairly safe to drive on the highway, because those 4-speeds, I mean, it's not a, you know, super powerful car, you know, 4 cylinders, probably 92, 96 horsepower, something like that. Zero, like, I mean, you're dead if you get in an accident in that car, like 100%. Like, it's tiny. No one can see you. Ron, if you were driving your huge, what is it, a Tahoe or a Suburban or whatever it is you drive, like, you would just drive right over it. Like, it was just, it's like not even a blip.
Well, Ron's wouldn't. Ron's scrapes.
Punch you into the air, but, you know, one of your Monteros might, like, actually go over it.
That's very true. So, you know, so I put a 5-speed in it, and then, you know, and then it kind of, I started to do some adulting, and I ended up buying a place, and I was like,
fun. It's a
car, house, ah, shit. So I sold the car, but I'm super stoked. It went to a woman who lives in, on the East Coast, and I'm glad that it went to a woman. I'm glad it was her first classic car. She'd never, and she, you know, she was born the same year as the car. And she's like, I really wanted this, and la, 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 la. And I'm like, great. You're the perfect person for it. And I had it for 3 years and I doubled my money.
Oh, wow. Damn. Because you and I have the exact opposite car buying and owning experience then. Because I won't sit on an ad. I'm like, I got to go look at this right now. And I don't wait, and I go, and I'm like, and I drive it for 2 seconds. I'm like, oh shit, I need it. And like, I don't have anyone else look at it. And then I make bad decisions, and then I sell it for like only a little bit of a loss. I'm like, nice.
That car only cost me $1,000 to drive for a year and a half.
Right. Well,
I mean, that's fine too. I did have someone came with me and checked the compression and all 4 cylinders on it. So
that's brilliant. Yeah.
It's very, very careful. Person,
nice.
Maybe
nice.
You should try my techniques.
No, I'm gonna keep flinging it at the wall and see what happens. So we're going back to off-roading. You've been competing in the Rebel Rally for a few years now. How important of an event do you think this is for showing women and girls that adventure is for everyone?
Super important. It's an outstanding event. It's the longest map and compass off-road navigation rally in the United States. It just happens to be for women. It's one of those events that is, I mean, it's 7 days. Like, you're not allowed to have a GPS with you. So they totally like wrap up your phone and bubble wrap for 8 days. And you're just kind of out there with your teammate and all of these other kick-ass women. And like, it's almost one of those sort of like kind of experiences where you're like, okay, yeah, day two, I'm like, yeah, this is easy, like no sweat. And then by day 4 or 5, you're like, oh my God, like your head is going to explode, or you're going to kill your teammate, or both, or like whatever it is. And it just, I mean, it literally like tests you on so many different levels. And you know, the woman who put it together, her name is Emily Miller, and she's like, I mean, this woman, she was a racer for Rod Hall's team. She's won everything that there is to win. Like, she's a stud, like she's a superstar. And she really, she's like, look, I interviewed her last year for Overland Journal, and she said, you know, she's like, if I were interested in training drivers, I would start a school. Like, that's not what this is. She wanted an event that was accessible to women who weren't necessarily pros. There are definitely pros who enter, but all you need to have is basic navigation, map and compass navigation skills and basic off-road driving skills. But she also, and I really tip my hat to her for this, you don't need a car that's like super prepped. This is not Dakar. This is not, you know, this is not any kind of like super crazy thing like, you know, King of Hammers where you need just like a rig that's like super built. You can do this event in any stock all-wheel drive car, change out the tires and you're set. And that was her intention. And I think it was really kind of a stroke of genius on her part, A, because she has all these manufacturers now who are, you know, dying to put their cars into this event because it's a true testing ground for them. Like as far as the capabilities of, you know, the ID4 was in it last year. You know, Jeep puts cars in. I drive for Nissan, like the Frontier, you know, all these cars are all these stock cars and trucks. And there are two classes, the crossover class and the 4x4 class. And so it's really great because it's, you know, kind of this, like this, the point of entry is not like here. Like you can enter here and you're probably not going to win if you're entering here, but you learn things and you build skills. And I think that's what is so critically important for women and girls, especially right now, to be able to see other women and girls doing this stuff and to say, oh, hey, someone else is doing it. Oh, I can do that. Oh, totally. That's fantastic. Like, sure. Why wouldn't I do that? Like, your daughter is at such an advantage now, Jeff, because she just has to go onto Instagram and say, oh, hey, look, there's a lady working on cars. Hey, Dad, I want to be a mechanic. Okay, great, honey. Yeah, sure, you can do that. You know, right. There's a lot of other stuff on social media that I wouldn't want my daughter to see. Trust sure. me, I'd be like, no, we don't look at that because you have more currency than that. But the good side of that coin.
Daddy's going to bookmark that page.
Don't follow what daddy follows. So, I mean, I think it's critically important. And, you know, Emily's gotten flack. Oh, it's all for women. Like that's, you know, sexist. And she's just like, yeah, no, it's not.
Fuck you.
Yeah.
I know. No, I mean, listen, you
the
can't.
The people who make that argument, whereas like something is
we can't only for anything.
It's only for X is when it's because Y and Z have been getting to do stuff for so long with less to no barriers to entry. And, right. and so people are going off and like, well, fine, fuck you. We're going to go do our own thing. And then when they do that thing, people are like, well, wait, why can't I be in that thing? It's like, dummy, come on, man. Like people who don't understand why other groups who aren't them go off and do things, it's because those doors have been closed to people who aren't them.
Right.
And so they just can't wrap their head around it. And so I say more events like this, the better.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah. And my question is, yeah, go ahead.
My questions about the Rebel Rally are, how long has it been going on and how long has it enjoyed the support of OEs, manufacturers? Like, you know, I think it's great that anybody could participate, but it seems like obviously it's advantageous to have the support of a major manufacturer to supply a vehicle and, you know, all the accoutrement to help you succeed.
100%. So Ron, this past year, 2021 was the sixth year of the event. OEMs have been participating since year one. Nissan is the only manufacturer to have participated every single year.
Nice.
And they have participated with my teammate. Her name is Sedona Blinson. She honestly, this is the greatest story. And this is the testament to the strength and the power of the event. She was she's a stay-at-home mom, you know, she's a full-time mom. And her husband, like, you know, they would go out and do sort of off-roading, you know, overlandy stuff, but he would mostly drive. But she really was like, I kind of want to do more about this. And she heard about the event. She had no navigation experience. She had very little off-road driving experience. But she was She was pregnant at the time that she signed up, and she knew that she'd have an 8-month-old baby by the time the event came around.
Damn.
She said, you know what? Screw it. I'm going to do this. Her brother-in-law worked for Nissan, and she reached out to Nissan and said, hey, how about you give me a truck for this thing? That was it. Like, and they didn't pay for her to do it. They didn't, there was not like wraps around the truck. It was just like, oh, hey, yeah, we've got this. We've got this Titan just sitting here. Like, yeah, sure. You want this one? And she was like, yeah, thank you. And so she grabbed her best friend and she's like, come on, let's go. We're doing this. And they managed to raise the money. And it's not cheap. It's 12 grand, you know, for a team.
Oh, wow.
But there are tons of privateers who do it. And they, you know, the Rebel is great. They'll like give you help, like figuring out how to get sponsorships and how to, you know, how to kind of come up with the cash. And she did it. And she pumped breast milk the entire time that she was doing it. She pumped and dumped because she just wanted to be able to breastfeed her kid when she got back from the rally. And yeah, she just kind of caught this bug. And literally, I mean, I started driving with her. She had to, so I first did it in 87 with also with a different teammate. That's where we met. And then in, did I say in 87?
Yeah, I'm like, wait, what?
Oh my gosh.
So 2007 or 2017. Right, yeah.
Yeah, that kind of brain, guys. So I did it in 2017 and that's where we met. And then again, you know, her teammate was pregnant at the time, was going to have a 3-month-old when the event happened. And she's like, too young. Yeah. So Sedona reached out to me and she said, hey, my experience was not good.
Not with Sedona.
The first one was terrible. Right. Just not a good personality fit with the other teammate. Great. No problem. And I was like, I'm never doing that again. Like, right. Unless the situation is perfectly, yes, absolutely, no hesitation. And she asked me, we were at Overland Expo, and she's just sort of standing there. We're standing there shoulder to shoulder, and we're just like listening, and she just kind of leans over. She's like, hey, so my teammate may not do it next year. She's like, would you be interested in doing it with me? And I was like, yep. And that was it. I mean, it was like that. There was no other conversation until it was like, okay, so this is happening.
Right.
And, In the few short years since she started, I mean, this chick is a world-class navigator, as far as I'm concerned. She's brilliant. You know, we came in 6th last year out of 52 teams. We came in 4th the year before. I mean, we're up there competing with these, like with the chicks on the podium. I mean, and that to me is the testament that this event is you have this opportunity to kind of get in there and to push yourself into places like that are so uncomfortable. It sucks. It's hard. It's so hard. And yet at the end of the day, you're like, damn, I fucking did that.
Totally.
That's awesome.
I can't even imagine just being without my phone for 3 hours at a time. Like, honestly, yeah.
Super stressful. It's the best 8 days of the year for me. Yeah. Really? So good. You just are like,
I can see that.
Don't need it. And then you come back and you're like, oh, 500 emails. Fuck. But whatever. They're all junk anyway. And everything's been resolved since you're gone. And everyone's just like, yeah, it's fine.
That's great. Is there an off-road event you'd like to tackle that you haven't done yet?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Just watching the Dakar, like, they make it look so easy, don't they? They're just not Dakar.
Yeah, Dakar. You can borrow that one.
I don't know, but
it's crazy. We all know it's not easy.
It's so nuts. It's so hard. You know, they have these massive teams behind them with tons of cash. But yeah, I mean, I would love to also I've never even like gone down to Baja during the Baja 1000, and I would love to do that because I did Wide Open Baja. You've done it too. That is some fun shit.
What is that? What is Wide Open Baja?
Whoa. Tell them what is fun, Jeff.
Wide Open is a company that you go down, you start in Ensenada, and they do 3-day, 5-day, 7-day tours where you drive their it's its own class, like, of vehicle.
Like a Dirtfish for Baja?
Kind of, but it's more intense than Dirtfish. Not that I've been to Dirtfish.
You're in a tube car for this.
You're in a buggy. You're in a buggy with a Subaru engine and this beefy 4-speed race gearbox and like BFG KM3s usually is what they run now. I think 12 to 15 inches of travel, which is for Baja these days, is actually like not that, like side by side have more. But they I've done a 3-day, which is the most I've done, but you're on the Baja routes, like you're driving where they are, and it's fucking incredible. And you go out to this place called Mike Sky Ranch.
I'll send you a link. I've ever been.
I love it. I love Mike Sky
Ranch. What'd you say, Lynn?
Scariest place I've ever been. I'll tell you why after Justin. All right.
It's in the middle of nowhere in the mountains outside somewhere in Mexico, like, you know, 60 to 90 miles away from Ensenada, maybe 100. I don't even know, but it's owned by this dude who made a lot of money back in the day, and he was way into off-road racing. So it's kind of like an outpost for the off-road racers down there. And like, they shut power off at 11 o'clock at night, you know, because they're making their own power. But there's a huge bar in it. There's a pool. It's like a little casita in the middle of these hills, and you just kind of come up on it. And you're like, where the fuck are we? I've been there twice, and it's crazy.
It's definitely like nothing else. And the weekend that I went there, I was with Julia LaPalme, who is a fantastic automotive photographer, and she and I were doing some work for Truck Trend magazine. And we were there, it was just the two of us, are driving our instructor guy and his right seat guy, and then the two people who were running the hotel, and that was it.
Yeah.
There's nobody else there. And so we're kind of like walking around, and it's not like luxury hotel time.
No.
It's like out in the middle of nowhere. It's the yikes. Like horror movies start here. And I'm in bed and I'm laying there and I'm like, oh, this is when someone comes in and like human traffics me. Like, it's going to happen. And I literally had this whole scenario in my head of like, my shoes are by my bed. If I hear someone jimmying the lock, I'm going to get up. I'm going to hide behind the door. So when they open the door, I can just sneak around the door and run out. I mean, I had an escape plan.
I'll barge in and I'll just.
Yeah. Freakish. I've been there twice.
No one there.
The first time I was there was for the launch of the KO2 tire. So it was packed with like three waves worth of journalists, like 50 people, you know, plus. And the place was jamming. The second time I was there, it was Josh and I, because we were in one buggy, the instructors who we were following on the drive in the other buggy, and then like the family that runs the place, and that was it. But we had like there's a bar on site. I'm a 41 year old guy, like obviously we have different thoughts when we check into like CDS hotels, just out of, you know, our own safety and peril, but like Josh and I were the only two in the bar, just like, cause there was no one else. So we were shooting video in there. We were shooting like a mid drive interview. But like you wake up and it, you know, it's the best fresh tortillas you've ever had. And,
yeah,
and shit, like
food is outrageous. Yeah. But yeah, Baja would be another thing that I would like to experience. You know, I don't know if I would have the cojones to drive it. You know, it's funny at the beginning of that, of the Wide Open, there's like this huge speech that they give and you're all standing around there and the guy is literally saying stuff like, if you feel like you could launch off of the cliff, like don't, like just, and he's like saying all these things and I'm looking over at Jules and I'm like, this is idiotic. Like, why is he saying all of these, like these so like common sense things? But when you're out there in that car and you have that much travel and you just feel like, oh, I'm invincible, man. Like nothing bad could happen to me. I can see how somebody would be like, I can fly this shit off this cliff.
And there are some parts of the trails, especially after Mike Sky Ranch the next morning, where you're like, hey, that's a big drop to the left. Like, oh boy.
Yeah. But then, I mean, it's like, you know, listen, it's like the Wild West. You can drive wherever you want. And, you know, like you could drive on the beach. And it's just like, it's just like next level, just like, again, freedom of driving. It's pretty cool.
It was awesome. I loved it so much. I got to get back down there. Bradley Brownell wanted to ask you, what's your two questions? What's your dream Radwood car and what's your dream Autopia 2099 car?
Okay, dream Radwood car, and I'm only going to say this because it's in my head right now, but Subaru XT.
That's your dream Radwood
car? Yeah, I love it. I wanted that so bad when I was...
I don't even know what that is.
What? Oh,
wedge. You were going to say like SVX, and I'd be like, yeah, like that's weird.
No, awesome. No.
Subaru XT, I don't even know what that is.
It's this wedgy Subaru that I think Jajaro designed it.
Well, like, maybe. I'm a fan now.
That would make sense.
But it was like affordable guys, wedgy supercar. And I remember.
Gotta find
it. Was before the SVX.
Okay.
It's older than that. And it's like, has like this, like kind of an oddly long ass to it, I think.
Yeah. Right? It has a big butt. And
almost
I
like a
just,
Lotus Elan or a Quad or whatever it was.
I was so fascinated with them. I remember going into the Subaru dealership and like pretending like I had the money to actually buy it. And I like test drove it and I'm like, oh, this is so great.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's funny because I was thinking like Porsche 959.
Oh, I mean like attainable, like things that I could.
87 horsepower.
In Lynn's dream, she's like,
gotta have the automatic shoulder belt.
Right. No, in Lynn's dream, she's like, I won the lottery. The jackpot was $35,000. Yay.
I can buy seven
I'm a realist,
of these.
Guys. I'm a realist. I mean, yeah.
I won the mega thousands.
Who wouldn't want like a 930 turbo? Okay. So the other, I'll go other side of the scale. When I was in, again, another high school fantasy car was the 911, that the 930 turbo white whale tail convertible.
Sure.
There okay. You go. There, Bradley, there go. That's my expensive car.
What about Autopia?
Autopia would be, honestly, it would be like an EV conversion probably of my 1600.
Yeah, that's what I honestly expected you to say that, and that's a good answer. I'm down with that. Now I'm going to move on to the rest of the questions because Bradley didn't ask it in a traditional way, but I saw it. So I was going to ask it for
okay,
him.
Okay, I love that.
We are going to go to, I'm pulling them up on my phone. So I have those ones ready, but I'm about to go to Twitter. Pull this up over here.
Uh-oh.
All right.
I'm
we don't have that many on
I'm
Twitter.
I'm not on Twitter.
That's fine. I wish I wasn't, but I like retain it for work-based purposes. Yeah. Dante Casale at Casale underscore Dante. Does the group think an OEM would have a Rebel edition or similar SUV for a women-only motorsport event? And would it be embraced by car dealers? I think the Gazelle and Rebel are very cool and a good marketing opportunity for OEMs.
I mean, honestly, I feel like I've tried so hard to convince Nissan to do just even a Nismo package, like a Nismo version of what, because they, so the Nismo has gotten back into the aftermarket off-road space, like as of last year, 2020, and we tested some of their products last year and then the year before too. Yeah, I mean, I think that would be super cool. It's, you know, I don't know how much like its own kind of model would kind of do something that would, I mean, I don't know, you know, OEMs are always thinking about sales and how important mm-hmm. that stuff is. So, but sure, man, it would be cool. And you should see some of the rigs that come out to compete because they put out all the stops. I mean, last year we begged them to go old school, red, white, and blue, desert, you know, kind of
that
desert
cool.
racer.
Yeah. The hard Nissan, body, like
hard
yeah,
body
yeah.
Nissan. And they loved it. They embraced it. They love that truck. So, yeah, I mean, chicks get into that stuff. So I don't see why an OEM wouldn't think, well, yeah, a woman's going to be interested in buying this.
Yeah, especially if you have someone like Casey Curry's wife running a Jeep.
Totally.
Curry's so big with Jeep. He could be like, hey, guys, why don't we just make a small run, you know, Rebel / Curry so we can get his axles in there or something like that, you know?
Yeah, and that Mojave, honestly, is probably one of the better vehicles to run for that event.
Yeah,
very,
that makes sense.
Very appropriate for it.
Matthew at Plays With Cars. Which Montero is best, Lynn's two-door half Monty or your four-door full Monty?
Mine. By the way, I love that Matt said that because if I have the original Sunshine plates from California on it, but I only have the rear plate. I don't have the front plate. So if I ever get pulled over, I already have in my head what the black plate is going to be, and it's going to be half Monty.
I like it.
It's not the full Monty.
I love it. Yeah.
I prefer longer wheelbase versions of off-road vehicles, but I understand why people prefer the twos.
They're not as good to off-road in, bro. Like, it's purpose-built vehicle. It's not, hey, how much shit can we throw into the back? It's, how can I get up that thing?
You know what, though? On those cars with those engines, we're getting up the same stuff.
No, you're right.
We're getting up the same stuff.
Okay.
I would say, though, Lynn, you should go for that plate and just custom paint it to the, like, ooh, 70s, 80s blue plate. Like,
there are people who do that.
Yeah. Can you hook me up with someone who could do that, Ron?
Yeah, totally.
All right.
Victor Troia at Victoria 21. What are your thoughts on Alfa Romeo in the U.S., and what do you think they should do after the Giulian Stelvio? I don't really care personally.
Okay, so I am going to say one thing about Alfa because I appreciate the question. I mean, I love the history of that brand. I think that their design has always been like pretty impeccable. I think the Giulia to me is like the best looking, sports sedan on the market that you can get. The Stelvio, as long as you're driving the 4C, is like a shit ton of fun to drive as an SUV.
The Quadrifoglio.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And I will say this, the 4C didn't do what I think Alfa intended it to do, which was sort of relaunch the brand like en masse here in the States. Right. However, if you were smart enough to get your hands on one of those things, A, it's a beautiful car, and B, it's going to be a definite collector because there aren't many of them and they're only going up in value. So I really do hope that they can survive as a brand. Again, that history is something you cannot buy. I remain ever hopeful.
I think you're totally right on the 4C being a collector. I'm one of the few who just really didn't give a shit about it when I drove it. Like, I was like, okay, like, unless I'm on a racetrack where it's so, so stiff.
Yeah.
And as someone who's getting older, I don't need that anymore.
No, it's really, I mean, you're not road tripping in that car.
No.
And I know people who've done like massive road trips in those, much to their dismay.
What could you carry? You can't do a massive road trip. You can't go LA to Phoenix, LA to Vegas with that car.
Like, just underwear changes.
Right. I mean, they're super cool looking. Like, they're gorgeous. Like, every time I see one, I'm like, that is fucking cool.
Head turner.
And I would love to drive one, but I don't think I could ever live with one. Like, there's no way. Like,
I could live with the yellow one. Thank you.
Yeah. On Instagram now, Sean Keeley, who's your favorite KBB intern is his question.
Sean Keeley is my favorite KBB intern. Right. Actually, it's this guy named Fred. No, I'm just kidding. Hi, Sean.
I was going to say Josh Ostrander is mine. Mac F2, he's going to be so mad when he hears that. Mac F250 MC. He said, talk about 90s Mitsubishis, and we kind of already did. CNC.
I don't know, Matt, I will say this. Like, I don't really know much. Like, I don't know much about like the Eclipse or the other ones. Like,
yeah, there are so many more marks, so many more platforms.
Yeah. There was tons of stuff.
Mitsubishi now is just like, I don't even know what they offer here in the States. Like,
Three cars.
Yeah. But I think globally, I think the hybrid is like the best selling hybrid, like outside of the US or some shit like that.
Oh, the Outlander is best selling hybrid in the world, according to Mitsubishi.
Right. CNC picks top three 00s 2000 to 2010 era vehicles that are undervalued currently, but you think will be the next big thing.
Wait, what's the question again?
What are the top three cars from the aughts, so 2000 to 2010, that are undervalued currently, but you think will be the next big thing? Like, what's about to go up from 2000 to 2010?
Everything.
Yeah.
Is that SN95 era Mustang?
Yeah. But it's SN95 New Edge era. I don't think that's, personally, I'm a huge Mustang person. but those cars were the mod motors. They were 4.6s. Like yeah, the earlier cars, the 94, 95 cars with the 5.0s are what I would say are bound for appreciation. But I'll go first, obviously, since I'm talking. But I think any 55 AMG car, Ford Lightning, and what else?
Ford Lightning, definitely.
What else? I would say I'll give you there. There's from the SN95 New Edge cars, the 03, 04 Cobras have always maintained value, and like they're super popular in the aftermarket. So
right. Do you think Camaros could go up, considering that they're going to kill the Camaro?
Nope. Sorry, Anthony. But your catfish. He's catfish Camaro. It's gonna level off. Like they just weren't great cars. Like they had decent aftermarket support, but like they just weren't great cars out of the box.
Right.
Not very collectible, and they're fun, and you can like they make for a good like drag platform.
Right.
But they don't make for a good road race canyon car. Like
true. All right. It's good answers. The Lightning, especially with the in the face of the upcoming one.
Well, I'd say watch the 55 cars. Like those AMG cars, like I think are going to double in value in the next 2 years.
Interesting, because they're affordable right now. Some of them,
right?
Taco_Bellionaire. Am I a dork if I put KC highlights on a truck I don't really off road? They look cool. If you asked me this question, like a few years ago, I would have said, yeah, like if you're going to put something on your car, use it. And I've really softened on that stance. Like I agree that the KC highlight, the daylighter face is like, it's really classically kind of a cool off-road thing. And I mean, as long as you're not turning them on the road, then I don't care.
Yeah. I think your car is an expression of yourself, and you know, I'm with you. When I was younger, I was like, they don't even use that.
Right.
Judgy. And now I'm like, who cares?
Right. The only thing I will judge is high lift jacks. I will continue to do that till the day I die.
I agree. I agree with you there. I agree. I'm almost at the roof tent stage as well, where it's like.
That's usable though. So
everybody
I know
with a roof tent uses it, because it is a complete pain in the ass to drag around with you everywhere.
Right.
If you're not using it.
Yeah, but you guys, like once you're there, like you're stuck. You can't go, you know, on a car that you want to go wheeling on, you got to pack up your entire shit and then go. Like you can't. Yeah.
I don't have experience. Like I live vicariously through my off-road overlanding friends, and they seem to totally take advantage of it and make the most of it, but you know. I definitely wouldn't.
I want to go back to the Ott question again.
Yeah.
Quickly. Sure. Was the Dodge Stealth, did that make it into, or was it the 3000 GT?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, that to me, I think is a car that is sort of got some boss happening with it.
I agree.
Maybe.
They're just,
I just feel like
it's complicated beaching. Electronically.
Yeah,
totally.
Especially the convertible VR4s.
Oh my God. Like that would be the shit.
I just, every time I see them, I'm
who
like,
who would work on that? Who would fix your problems with that? Like there's no specialty shop in like.
Time to open one, Ron.
Like, what?
Time to open one.
Yeah, totally.
No thanks. Josh, Mr. Steal Your Dog wants to know why you're so slow in carts, which is a very rude question.
First of all, I'm not that slow in carts. I beat Mike Danger our first go around. So there's that. And the second go around, you jerk face, Mr. Steal Your Dog. The second go around, I was behind two tool bags.
Are we talking about
a
K1? Yeah. Yeah, we all went karting.
Okay.
Gotcha. I just didn't want to embarrass all you guys because you're all like, oh, I have a dick and I have to go fast and move. But no, there was a guy in front of me who was being a fucking tool, and I was just too much of a genteel lady to go around. Also, I didn't want him to. There was no way he knew that I was right behind him and ready to pass him. And the guy with the flag wasn't paying attention.
Fuck him, pun him, get him out of the way.
The Jacob Brown asks, what is Lynn most proud of writing, both automotive and screenplay?
Oh, most proud. There's two stories that I've written that there's a lot of things that I've done that I feel really fortunate about and just lucky to have done them. I wrote a story last year about a lady named Alice Ramsey, who was the first woman to drive across country back in 1909. And she did it in a 1909 Maxwell. It was a four-seater, and she took her two sisters-in-law and their 16-year-old neighbor. And she was the first woman to drive all the way across country, and she was just an absolute stud. And I thought that was a fun story that I got to write for Haggerty, and was really excited that I did it. Before my job at Kelley Blue Book, I did a lot of freelance stuff for Automobile Magazine, and I got to take a 1988 Countach to my 30-year high school reunion. I just said it.
So yes.
That one
boss
was
of all bosses.
That was pretty badass. But you want to know the funny thing is I was not cool in high school at all. Like zero coolness. Like no one, I had very few friends.
A child actor. You were cooler than you will give yourself.
No, they didn't think so. They just thought I was like, whatever. That's fine. So I drove this, I was like, fuck, I'm going to take this car and I'm going to be cool as shit. And I took this car and it was a hunk of garbage. I mean, this is Farrah's car now. Like Farrah bought it from this guy, from this other guy. And I had borrowed it from him for this story. And he was like, yeah, sure. Go ahead. Take it. Except like if you parked on even a slight incline, the door would close automatically. And he's like, don't touch the windshield wipers because there's no rubber in there. It costs like $20,000 to put new rubber in the windshield wipers and you'll scratch the shit out of the wind. I had to put a backpack behind me because the seat wouldn't move forward. So I was dry. I mean, the clutch was gone. Anyway, I drive it to the reunion and no one notices.
This like the perfect Countach. Like this is.
Right. This is the supercar as it's meant to be. Like one guy saw it when I was coming in, and then like the only person who talked to me was my old assistant principal. So that was a really fun story. And okay, I'll say one more thing. Like, cause I just was in England and I got to drive the Aston Martin DB5 Goldfinger continuation car. And I wrote about it for Haggerty, and I got to go into the Aston Martin works, and I got to like shape metal on an English wheel and use hammers and I was in the trim shop sewing stuff. It was fabulous. And that story is coming out in Radius magazine in a couple months, but
nice.
Yeah. Awesome. Oh, and then movies. Yeah. There's something coming that will be probably the reason why I was put on this planet, but it's just, I can't talk about it yet, but Jacob will put a pin in that. We'll talk about it when we sell it and I'm at the premiere and I'll be like, now I can answer his question.
Nice. Very cool. Mike Cervantes Photog, what would you improve on the New Frontier after rallying it in the Rebel?
Oh, the New Frontier is super good, but there are a couple of things that really, the new body style is so great. But, you know, the biggest nitpick I had was that new squared off front end really does like kind of disturb the visibility factor that you have. So the previous hood line was very, was much more rounded. And so this one is much more squared off. So my sight lines were not as good as they were with the previous generation. I don't know that I would change anything because I love how it looks. But that was definitely a problem. The seats, you know, they didn't really have so they have lumbar support on them, but the place where the lumbar support is like up here, and no one knows that. And so I was like, there's no lumbar support in this thing the whole time. I was like, more lumbar. And then afterwards they're like, yeah, we should have put it somewhere else. So they should have put it somewhere else. But I did not, I truly did not have a ton of complaints about the truck. I think it drives great. It certainly handled perfectly well. The size is perfect for what I was doing. And plenty of power, you know, good transmission. I felt I was needing nothing.
Awesome. Another question from Mike. What car or truck are you most looking forward to driving in 2022?
Oh, okay. Is this a wish list of like, hopefully I'll be able to drive them? The Lotus Emira is super high on my list. I loved the Evora GT. This one is going to be a really important car for Lotus. It's basically their last combustion engine. So it's going to be a big one. And I think as we kind of cruise into this EV space, there's going to be so many of those cars that are like the last of that I think there are going to be like kind of huge spotlights on. And so I'm interested in those cars. I know that Micah just drove the Maserati, that MC20 today.
Right.
I probably can't say anything, but I'm sure that thing just rips your face off.
It's twin turbo V6, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just super, super crazy. Amazing. I'm actually going on the press trip for the Hummer EV if this pandemic ever goes away. And I'm definitely looking forward to that. Maybe if it just chills out a little bit. So could you do us a solid COVID and bugger off? I'm looking forward to the Hummer EV to what else, Jeff? What else is coming?
I want to drive the Lightning.
Yeah.
And then I really want to drive the new Z just because I'm hoping.
Oh, shoot.
I'm hoping it's good.
That's so high on the list. And I'm so nervous about that. Like, I'm not in a bad way, but just like the comparisons with the Supra, like there's things about the Supra that I dig and things that I don't like. And so,
I saw that they showed at Tokyo Auto Salon, like a not wide body, but like fender flared, hopped up version that could be like the Nismo version. Like that seems cool and exciting. Like, you know,
I thought it looked super good. You know, yeah. Ron, to that end, I actually saw a Supra that had all obviously aftermarket, but had a wing on it, and just I was like, maybe it was that was kind of getting dark, and I'm like, oh, it doesn't look so bad like that.
Right. We have a company Supra that's on loan from us by Toyota of Escondido, which is great. Like, thank you guys. Like, we have a number of Toyota vehicles, but like, my only complaints with the Supra are interior ergonomics, visibility for a person. Like, I'm 6'1", so a person, I'd say over 5'11", like, visibility is atrocious. And like, the driving experience is so great. I love it. Like, I love driving it.
Do you guys have
the floor? I can't see out of it. I can't like figure out anything inside. Like, none of it is intuitive. It's like all BMW bullshit I drive. And it's just like, ugh. Like, if I could just have like a real distilled ergonomic version of that car that like doesn't have any of the bullshit, like forget your screens, forget everything. Let me just use my phone and, you know, just avoid all of your technology and just enjoy the driving experience. That would be the best version of that car. Like,
that's going to be the Z.
Do you guys have the 4 or the 6?
I hope that's what the Z is. Honestly.
Ron, do you guys have the 4 or the 6?
It's the whatever 3.0, the 6 cylinder. The 6. Yeah. And it's got exhaust, which is obnoxious. Like,
yep.
It's like, it sounds like it's got a burble tune because it's just like every D cell is like, bah, 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 bah,
yeah,
bah,
too
bah.
Much.
It's like,
yeah, that's not
up. Like, you know, I'm 40 plus. Like, I don't need all that shit.
No. It's so annoying.
Yeah.
So
I don't need the attention. I just want to drive and enjoy this thing.
So another car that was on my list that I actually just got to drive is the Golf R, the 22 Golf R. I fell in love with that car, the last gen of that car. Just the first car I ever took to a track and had proper track instruction on. And I just thought it was such a special car. And so I was really eager to drive that one. But I'm not going to tell you about it because you guys have to tune into my video on Kelly Blue Book's YouTube.
Nice. Nicely done.
Plug.
Last question on Instagram. This one from Chris Arena. Dead brand you want to revive. There's nothing that jumps out at me. It's because, like, you know, you could pick one of the GM ones, I'm sure. You know what? Actually, I think it would make a lot of sense if they had brought Saturn back as their, like, affordable EV arm.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Can I say, oh, this may be, like, harsh, but can I say Cadillac?
Sure. But, I mean, I totally get where you're coming from because I'm a huge Cadillac fan, like a legacy, like, fan. Like, I almost got a Cadillac, like 60s Cadillac emblem tattooed on my back because that was like the attachment that my family had to the Cadillac brand. My grandfather had something like 22 Cadillacs in his lifetime. My dad had like a 75 Eldorado and another, like a handful of other Cadillacs. So I definitely identify with the Cadillac brand, but I feel like you haven't had anything for an enthusiast like me for outside of the CTSVs for decades, but like they made a real effort with the Blackwing cars lately, but it's like
and then they make
it
an
just
effort.
Doesn't make any sense. Like you're trying to make a motorsports brand out of a luxury brand, and yeah, it's a better product than your standard E63, E43, M5, but like, you know, Mercedes and BMW are always going to top you in the performance sedan category. You know, it's like the M5 CS is, you know, will punk the Blackwings.
Yeah.
And that's a shame because Cadillac has, again, the thing that you can't buy is history and legacy. And Cadillac has all that, you know, but they're not the Cadillac of Cadillacs anymore.
100%. Yeah.
As we were sitting here talking, I was touching a piece of my Lego Defender that's on my desk and a piece just fell off, which is a true Defender experience. I will fix that later.
Does it have little electrical problems in it?
If it had electronics, it would.
And little oil dripping underneath it.
I should add like a little piece of paper oil spill under it. That'd be really funny.
Cardboard.
Lynn, where can everybody find you on social media?
They can find me on the Instagrams. So I'm at LYN and then 2 underscores Woodward because some other Lynn Woodward has all the other things. but yeah, you can find me there. I'm not on Twitter. I'm not on TikTok. I'm not on Chip Chap or whatever it is.
I think it's Chip Chap.
Snap. Bing bong. I don't know. There's a ton of them. We should come up with one called Bing bong.
I'm sure it's already being made.
So Instagram, you can also find me on the Kelly Blue Book YouTube channel, which is where I do all the workings and do all the talkings about all the cars. So yeah, that's where you find me.
Ron, why don't you shout out your social media stuff real
777
quick?
777 style. Just search it. You'll find
nice
me.
And easy. I'm at Hooniverse Jeff. Lynn, thank you so much for coming on. It's been a pleasure having you. You
have
a wonderful
to have
guest.
Me back because I wanted to talk to you about the Vantage F1 model.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
So we'll
do that.
We'll chat more. Thank you so much. I love both of you guys.
Back.
You're both rock stars and, I want to know, Jeff, quite big question on my Instagram because I posted it. People wanted to know what hair products you use. That's a joke.
Right now,
I'm
definitely not me. Nobody's asking about my hair.
Thanks, everyone, for watching and listening. Please subscribe to the Hooniverse Podcast YouTube channel if you haven't already done so. We've broken it off the main Hooniverse channel.
You're not going to answer?
What's that?
You're not going to answer?
No, it was a joke question.
Yeah, she said it was a joke question. No, keep an eye out for keep an eye out for a new Blip Shift Surf. It's not new. It's one we redid, and we're bringing it back because somebody asked about it. It lands February 1st. And follow us on all the social medias if you like, and we will see you all next week. Thanks for listening and watching.
Adios.